The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Well, I'm not shocked at the breaking news you just heard in Ursula's newscast, but we're going to dive into it a little bit deeper. Welcome to The Big Show. Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios, streaming on Facebook Live. You might be able to hear. I'm a little fired up. We have a great show for you this afternoon. Between 12:30 and 1 o'clock, the coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, is going to join us. I haven't talked to him since last season, so we'll just get reacquainted, see what's going on. And then between 1:30 and 2 o'clock, I don't want to oversell this, but it's one of the most remarkable stories that I've ever heard, and we're going to share it with you between 1:30 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. I'm really excited to share this story with you guys. So I hope you can hang with us for the long haul this afternoon. We got a great show put together for you. And let's start with that breaking news.
The Big Lead. Breaking news.
So as you just heard in Ursula's newscast, a judge down in Pierce County has just ruled that Sound Transit can continue to illegally take your money. And I know a judge is supposed to stop illegal stuff. But as Hannah said in her report, it's a really technical thing. But the argument was that Sound Transit essentially lied to you when they got that Sound Transit 3 measure on the ballot because people didn't know that their car tabs were going to go up by this much. Now, if you listened to my show before that 2016 vote, you knew because I gave you the numbers. But Sound Transit did everything it could to delude people. And they're using an illegal valuation of all of our vehicles here in King, Pierce, and Snohomish counties. They, in some cases, have your vehicle valued at double what it's actually worth. They do stuff like the mob does. And a judge said, well, this is really technical. And as you just heard in the soundbite from Senator Steve O'Bannon, a judge at that level might not be equipped to deal with this. But the problem is, so they're going to go to an appellate judge who might be able to understand the nuances of a government agency stealing money from you better. How can a judge not be equipped to figure out that if a government agency is illegally calculating the value of your vehicles so they can illegally take, in some cases, twice as much money as what the law should call for, how can a judge not be equipped above the judge's pay grade? And so it's going to go to an appellate judge. And then because we're talking about hundreds of millions or billions of dollars at stake, then it would go to the state Supreme Court. And those decisions are preordained because the Democrat Party owns the Washington State Supreme Court. And so regardless of the merits of legal arguments, the Supreme Court will not go against their masters here in Washington State. So ultimately, Sound Transit will continue to illegally collect hundreds of dollars a year from all of the people in the district because the Supreme Court's bought and paid for. They do not rule by the Constitution. They do not rule by the law. They rule by party. And that's just the fact of the way things are going in our state right now. We got rogue corruption everywhere. Now, I will say there is one other tax story. A few months ago, I told you about how King County wanted to take an unprecedented step. You know how, your power and your sewer, it goes under the street before it comes to your home, right? Well, King County wanted to charge utilities rent for the use of roads. And I talked to attorneys months ago, and this was not only unprecedented, but it's clearly illegal. They wanted to jack up your utilities by maybe more than $100 a year, charging rent with this novel concept that they came up with. That, yeah, we'll just, somebody wants to put a sewer pipe under one of our roads? Here's the problem. Those roads don't belong to the King County Council. Those roads belong to you and me. We're the taxpayers. They should be doing our business. But the King County Council thinks they're our masters. And so the roads that you and I pay for, you and I own, they said, we're going to rent them out and charge you and I. Well, I'm happy to say a judge smacked that one down yesterday. Judge Samuel Chung said that there's no precedence for this. There's no way that King County can legally do this. Here's the problem. King County Council says they'll appeal this up to the state Supreme Court. And now we're back to what I just said. And the Democrat Party owns the state Supreme Court. And if they can conspire to screw you and me out of more of our money, they will. But that's where we're at right now with these lower rulings. 1-1 after today. And we should be 2-0, and we should be confident that the Supreme Court will protect our rights, but we can't be, because that's not the way things operate in Sewa. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
I talked a day or two ago with the attorney for the Showbox Theater about how the city of Seattle, Seattle City Council in particular, has conspired to try to steal a piece of property worth $40 million. And the reason I've been talking about this story so much is because there's nothing more essential to a free republic than private property rights. And now we're starting to see the devious lengths the Seattle City Council was traveling to try to steal a piece of private property. So you know the story. This guy named Roger Forbes, he owns the Showbox Theater. He wanted to sell to a Vancouver condo developer. They were going to tear down the Showbox, build a 44-story condo tower. They were going to sell it for, my best estimate, about $40 million. I told you that a few weeks ago after I talked to a bunch of commercial real estate people. But the city of Seattle and the city council, they had the music community come to them and say, hey, can you figure out a way to steal this piece of property from this private guy so we can save the Showbox? Because we have a lot of sentimental memories of the place. And now today at the C is for Crank blog, they've obtained emails that show what they call the extraordinary measures city council members and staff took to promote legislation that would expand the Pike Place Market Historical District to include the Showbox. And so what the city council conspired to do is just redraw arbitrarily this historical district line that right now goes down the west side of First Avenue, and they were going to just jut it out across the street around the Showbox and then back across the street. So the Showbox would be the only thing on the east side of the street. And what that meant was a bunch of things. Not only would that steal a $40 million piece of property from a private individual, but it would also steal more than $250 million in taxes from the city. And I ran through all of my calculations, but with the property taxes and the real estate excise tax and all of that, over the next 30 years, that condo tower would throw off more than $250 million. But in these emails obtained by this C is for Crank blog, they show that the city attorney's office told the city council, you shouldn't pursue landmark status because it's popular. You got to do it based on the law. But one of the people who testified was the lead singer of Death Cab for Cutie, Ben Gibbard. And the city council spokeswoman, Dana Robinson Sloat, wrote an email to the singer. Ben, thanks for your time by phone yesterday. As promised, below, you'll find suggested talking points for Monday's full council meeting. Now, I want you to understand the seriousness of this. The city council has public hearings so that they can listen to opinions that would then shape their decision on matters. But the city council reaches out to a guy because his band is popular right now and said, hey, here's what we want you to say when you testify before us. You think that system's a little bit rigged? So that we can steal a $40 million piece of property. And so in these emails, they told the guy, we'll meet first with Kashama Sawant for fewer than 15 minutes. Then I'll take you to Mike O'Brien and Lisa Herbold and council members Gonzalez and Mosqueda. Public comment begins at 2 o'clock, so we can decide in advance if you'd still like to speak. Sawant and her staff used private Gmail accounts instead of their official City of Seattle email addresses to discuss the Showbox legislation. The whole campaign was being run out of Sawant's office. And it is a bit unprecedented for them to shepherd around with private meetings somebody who's supposed to testify. Why do they do public comment if they are crafting the commenters? They did it so that they could steal a $40 million piece of property and $250 million in tax revenues because they wanted to be popular with the cool crowd. It's really shocking. And they got another email. Dated July 31st, assistant city attorney told council member Herbold that it'd be premature for the city council to take the position that the Showbox qualifies as a landmark when the expert boards process hasn't played out. Sawant's legislation said they were going to steal the land based on popularity rather than the legal standards. It's unbelievable. So now and the attorney I talked to for the owner, a day or two ago, they're now suing the city for $40 million for stealing this piece of property. Or attempting to. I mean, city is going to lose this one. Not even the rigged state Supreme Court can keep this one from being overturned. But I tell you what, when you got city council members who go to that kind of lengths to steal private property, you should be scared. You should be really scared of that. And I know we all got sentimental feelings about the Showbox. But if they start making decisions like that based on sentimentality and popularity, if they grant landmark status based on popularity, I'd be a landmark right now. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
Like I said, next half hour, Seahawks coach Pete Carroll, he's going to spend the entire half hour between 12:30 and 1 o'clock with us. And yesterday, Russell Wilson did his final press conference before going to Denver. And one of the things that came up was this Nike Colin Kaepernick ad campaign. And Russell Wilson's usually really, down the middle, doesn't want to say anything that'll offend either side. But the older he gets, the more willing he is to take stands on some of these social issues.
I haven't seen the Nike commercial. I've seen the ad thing. You know, I think that ultimately, I think us as a country right now, we get distracted about so many different things and we're fighting over all the wrong things. I think, like I've always said, it's really about love and grace and how can we make this world a better place. And I think that's the intention, more than anything else. And so, I think that as long as it surrounds love and grace and making this world a better place, that's what I believe in.
As I said yesterday, I don't like the ad campaign. I don't like the notion that Colin Kaepernick has sacrificed everything when he really hasn't sacrificed anything compared to our military. But the Nike commercial is brilliant, and Nike played us like a fiddle. They got everybody ticked off. They made sure everybody watched the commercial. They got $1 billion worth of free publicity. We'll talk with Pete Carroll about all of this coming up. We'll talk more about his team, how he's feeling about stuff in the next half hour here on The Big Show. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
Yeah, Donald Trump last night had a rally in Montana, and he was asked about, I'm so sick of everybody ripping me off. I was the first person to ever ask Donald Trump about Colin Kaepernick. And now that's all anybody wants to talk to him about, because we went viral when we talked to him about it. Now everybody rips us off about it.
You know, they had a new thing where they don't have to do that. You don't have to kneel. You can go back into the locker room. I think that's worse than kneeling in a certain way. You're going back in. That shows that you just have no respect for the anthem of the flag. I don't like what Nike did. I don't think it's appropriate what they did. I honor the flag. I honor our national anthem. And most of the people in this country feel the same way. They feel the same way.
So that's how the press feels about all of this stuff. I got some more audio. Oh, wait. Here's what he told me.
We had bad things to say about both you and Hillary. You following that story at all?
Well, I have followed it, and I think it's personally not a good thing. I think it's a terrible thing. And maybe he should find a country that works better for him. Let him try. It won't happen.
The timing of that interview was just perfect.
Mileage out of that. By the way, the other thing about Trump last night, he couldn't say the word anonymous.
The so-called resistance is angry because their horrible ideas have been rejected by the American people, and it's driving them crazy. Crazy. They're the ones, honestly, that have been driven crazy. The latest act of resistance is the op-ed published in the failing New York Times by an anonymous, really an anonymous, gutless, coward.
What's going on there?
I don't know.
You can't say anonymous. That's really disturbing. That's troubling.
An anonymous, really an anonymous, gutless,
That sounds worrisome to me.
You're just saying it too fast. An anonymous.
No, he tried twice. He took two runs at it.
I know. I don't.
That's disturbing. The rest, but that was the only word all night.
That's
the
least scary thing. I'm worried about him.
I watched a chunk of the rally in the interview, and I didn't hear him have trouble with any other words, but I don't know. I'm kind of worried about the man. I'm worried about our president.
An anonymous, really an anonymous, gutless coward. You just look.
Okay. That there is your big lead.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
As I said, that is just teeing it up for what's going to be a great 3 hours with you this afternoon. Coming up right after the news, Pete Carroll's going to join us for the first time this season. He'll spend the next half hour with us. And then at 1:30, a story I'm really excited to share with you. All of that straight ahead on the Dory Monson Show.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
Here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is presented by Les Schwab and Bellevue Rare Coins. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Friday, and as Seahawks coach Pete Carroll likes to call it, it's the day before, and every Friday, we will talk with the coach to preview the upcoming weekend's game. And there's just a special buzz before the season opener. Head coach Pete Carroll joins us. Coach, it's great to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you too, Dory. I hope you've had a good offseason.
I have. I've really missed you too. I need you. You know, I need you in my life.
Well, I feel quite bad for you in that case, then.
No, actually, the correct
response. I have that much for you.
No, the correct response was supposed to be, I missed you too, Dory.
Okay. I was worried about you more than that, than me. I'm sorry.
Okay, all right, got it. Okay, let's start with the big news of the week, and that was the return of Earl Thomas. And how's he been looking in the couple days he's been back out on the field?
He's made it through the practices. We've given him limited work at this point just to start to acclimate him, and we'll see what we do with it on the weekend. We don't know quite yet. So just taking in the information, make sure he's okay and how he's responding. The last thing we want to do is put him in a situation where he's not you're not comfortable, you're not physically ready for it. So we're checking that out.
We all know the business side of, you know, what's transpired. And one thing I've learned about you, Coach, as we've talked over the years, is just how much time you spend on the mind and the motivational stuff and human relationships. How much do you tap into that when you have a business decision that also involves, you know, some really strong personalities?
Well, I can't really separate it. You know, Dory, the time that Earl and I have spent together just over the years and just going through all that we've gone through, and from when we first found him and drafted him and all the way through all of the ups and downs and everything, you know, we've developed a long relationship. And I feel like I know him really well. I'm sure he feels the same. And so what happens is when you get to serious stuff, you know, you eventually, and you start to put things together and start to make decisions, you're counting on your relationship. You're counting on how you know the person and how you can trust and all that. And that's just how we do it, you know. And I don't know any other way to do it. So it can't separate it. It's all part of it. And we've worked our way through it to the point where he's back with us. We would hope that he'll always be with us. That's what our intent has always been.
Sure. And the one thing I always hear is it's just business. And you're able to compartmentalize. And I'm talking about Earl in particular here. And are pro athletes that different from people like me? I mean, if I had something going on with my employer, I'd carry it around a little bit. I wouldn't be able to totally compartmentalize. Are pro athletes different, or is the ability to do that, put it in a separate box, is that exaggerated?
I really don't think you can, you know, throw everybody into a bucket and say they're all the same. I mean, it just depends on the people, you know, and how you deal with stuff. Obviously, you act like you got a chip on your shoulder, and so you can't get over stuff. No, I'm kidding. You know,
by the way, it's not an act.
Priorities, you know, it comes down to priorities, and our guys love to play, and they are just kind of, you know, spent their whole life preparing to play and to be in the midst of the arena and all of that, and so it's really hard to separate that. You know, and when it comes, you're just doing business, but you're not, football isn't part of it. It is part of it, and it is for all of us. So, it's a special, loving relationship we have at times, so we have to take into account all of that. And so that's what's happened so far, and you know, in all regards, there is business involved, but really we'd like to play the game of football, and so when we get our chances, we sure want to maximize that.
And I talked to a friend of mine a couple days ago who played in the league, and he said, look, it is such an intense job at hand, whether it's practice or game day, that you really don't have any room in your head for other stuff. You might do it off the field, you might do it at home, but when you got a job at hand, it's so intense that you just don't have room for anything else.
It is all consuming, and I mean, I've spent a whole career consumed by it, there's no question. You know, there's just so much to it, and there's so much emotional connection. Maybe more so than some job settings that, you know, that people in the real world experience, that there's a difference there, you know, and you have to give so much of yourself physically and emotionally to get to the heights that it takes to perform at this game and to sustain and all that, it just draws you in. And so it's a big deal and probably hard for others on the outside to understand that. To some extent, but it certainly is a tremendous draw to us.
Yeah, and I always like talking with you about life lessons, and maybe that's one that people in other professions should take a lesson from, that you got to focus, you got to be intense. If you want to be the best at your job, you got to put aside any competing influences.
Yeah, you really do. And then the art of being disciplined about that and putting, you know, what is at hand right in front of you, and that's everything you have is focused towards that, is what it takes, because if you don't, the guy next to you is. And that's just the intensity that this game has drawn. It's a wonderful experience because it's so full of life and living and emotions and all the cool stuff. But it sometimes it's probably hard for others to understand, you know, that it's a silly game and we get so yeah, crazy about yeah. it, you know, but it is the way it is.
Hey, tell me and our listeners about some of the new guys, some of the rookies, because on draft day, I was on the air and we were covering the draft, and I didn't know anything about any of these guys. I'm not a draft expert. So I'm on Google and I'm pulling up newspaper stories. And the one theme I thought I saw on draft day as I was learning the basics about all these guys was character. All the news stories seemed to talk about off the field stuff and things they've overcome and charities they're involved in. Was that at all a special attraction for you this year in particular?
I feel like we were more tuned in than ever. I think we did the best. We've always wanted to. I think we did the best job we've done. And collectively throughout the class of guys, every one of these kids are terrific kids. It's been part of why, if you've heard me try to explain and describe what it's been like working through the offseason with this team and these guys, they have just been extraordinary. And they've all been able to hold up their own in the group as well as on the field. Because of their character and their nature and their personality, and they've just added to the culture and really brought a lot of positive. And so right from all the way throughout, you know, from Rashad Penny all the way through the draft class, it's a great group, and they're exciting. They're fun to be around. They really are willing to give everything they got. It's all we could ever ask for. And yeah. So it's been a great experience up to now, and they're going to play. Well, I hope they play good too, but they've positioned themselves and taken advantage of the opportunity, and they're ready to go.
And one who's really going to be in the spotlight is Shaquem Griffin, starting for KJ Wright. And First of all, have there been brothers? You've been around the league a long time. Have there been brothers starting on the same team before?
Gosh, you know, I don't remember that happening.
I don't either, and I don't know the answer.
On the same side of the ball, you know that. I don't think it's happened very often, if it has at all. I don't know. I'm sure your people will come up and give you some stats on that. But it's an extraordinary experience, and the fact that they're identical twins too. Yeah. You know, it's remarkable that they fit together so well. They're just peas in a pod. You know, so it's really fun to see them share this experience and to go through it together.
It was really strange on the Drudge Report. It's the most read website in the world. And there was a headline yesterday, one-handed rookie to start. And I was thinking, man, I haven't even thought about that. As I've watched him through the preseason, it was an interesting little novelty around draft time, and it was such a great human story. But as I've watched Shaquem play, I never once even think about that. He's just an athlete out there.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I know that people are going to write that, you know, and take that vantage point. And in some regards, it's a wonderful thing because it helps a lot of other kids and people too. But this is a young man playing a game he loves. And I don't care what he looks like or where he comes from or whatever.
Yeah.
He's positioned himself to be part of something really special. And I'm thrilled for his opportunity and pulling for him and all that. But just because he's Shaquem Griffin. He's a great kid.
Yes, he is. All right, Pete. Hey, hold on for just a moment here. I want to talk about some of your other young guys. And also, we will preview Sunday's game against the Denver Broncos. Pete Carroll is with us, as he will be every Friday throughout the season, previewing the upcoming Seahawks game. And our conversation with the coach will continue in just a moment here on the Dory Monson Show. We're back with Seahawks coach Pete Carroll. We're going to preview Sunday's game against the Denver Broncos, the season opener. But one of the other rookies I wanted to talk with you about, Pete, is this punter. It's so weird that a punter is getting so much buzz.
Yeah, I think he would be one of your favorite guys, too. He's an amazing kid. He's a real athlete in terms of wanting to, or he just has a feel about the game and competing and a comfort about it. And he just feels like a DB or a receiver or something like that, another guy on the field. It doesn't seem like a specialty guy to you. And he's got marvelous talent. And he's just blown us away with all of the uniqueness and the stuff he brings, which fits right into our way of looking at stuff anyway. So
yeah.
It's natural that he's with us. Man, he's just been extraordinary. So hopefully he'll get off to a good start, too. I mean, he couldn't ask for any more kicking up there in Denver, you know, so he's going to have a chance to hang that ball up there for quite some time.
I have gotten a little sick and tired of listening to Brock Huard talk about how handsome he is, though. That's annoyed me.
Well, he's a dashing young man.
Yes, he is dashing. You sound like you're having a lot of fun. I've been listening to every one of your press conferences throughout this preseason, and you just sound as energized as ever.
Yeah, I feel like that, and I have the whole off season. And there were some difficult times and some transitions we had to make and all that, but as soon as we turned the corner on that and got going in the forward direction, it's just been nothing but challenge and fun and excitement and just wonderful people that we're working with and dealing with, the players and the coaches and all that. So it's been great to see the relationships developing, in particular to see Brian Schottenheimer and Russell and how they've worked together, and Dave Canales in there with those guys. That's really been special because Brian has so much to share, and he has an interesting outlook on the game, and for Russell, he's been able to see a whole new kind of way to look at the game, which is great for him because he's always involved in all that. So it's been exciting to see. Mike Solari's done a beautiful job. Kenny Norton coming back, that's a blast for me to have him back. I love everything about Kenny. You know, he's been one of my all-time favorites, and he's having time of his life, and so. Just a lot of really good positive stuff, and the players have responded in the same fashion.
Okay, let's talk real quick about your opponent, the Broncos, 17-1 in their last 18 home openers, and I think the reason is obvious. They've been practicing at altitude, and teams come in that have not had that experience throughout the summer. How big a challenge is that?
Well, those numbers make it a big challenge in one regard, but I like stuff like that. You know, those are good kinds of numbers for us to go after, and so we're going to go do what we do and play the game that we love playing, and see if we can take it right to all the way to the finish and get a win. We don't think anything else, and we're going for it. So yeah. We'll see how it is. Well, I'll let you know afterwards what the impact of it was. Right now, I don't really care. We're just going to go play some football.
And their quarterback, Case Keenum, he was 13-3 as a starter with another team last year. What kind of challenges do you have with him against, you know, you have a lot of young guys in your secondary, a lot of new faces. What kind of challenge is that?
Well, he's a really good ball player. You know, he's got the game in hand. He makes really good decisions. He didn't turn the ball over a lot last year. In a mixed offensive run and pass, you know, in Minnesota, he really thrived. And that's what they've constructed around him now. You can really count on him to lead the team and you know, make good choices. And so we're going to have to get in his way some. We're going to have to push him around some, knock him around in the pocket, make him have to move. We're going to have to make sure and not let the running game get going, because they'd be satisfied with running the football all day long if they could. Got a big old rookie running back in Royce Freeman. And so it's going to be a good challenge for us. You know, there's time to make that transition. You can go from one team to the next in a year, and that's what he's done. He's looked good in preseason as it's worn on, so we got our hands full. They're going to have a lot of momentum, and they'll be really energized for a big opener.
Any injuries? We know about KJ Wright is not going to be starting, not going to be playing. Any other injuries?
Well, yeah, there's always some stuff we're working through. We'll see. We'll see as we get to the game day. Everybody's going. Basically, Fluker's going to be in question, and we'll see how the other guys are. So. Yeah, we'll know more on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, and Earl Thomas will be a game time decision, I assume.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Got it. I got to say, Pete, for our first conversation of the year, you're not in preseason form. You're right in mid-season form already.
Well, I appreciate it. You are, too. You've obviously been talking to somebody. You're not just sitting there all by yourself at home, I know.
I got a wife. Yeah.
There you go.
All right, Pete. Have a great trip out to Denver. Good talking to you again. I'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Okay, and say hey to the missus. See you.
Okay, all right. The coach of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, he will join us every Friday. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.